This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Karina Anglada.
Oh, I love this so much.
And Darius Thomas.
I want to go sketch now.
Mia Lindsay is a freelance illustrator-designer based in Sweden. She creates beautiful work that infuses her love of sport with nature and the mystical, and she's also the owner of a massive colorful pen display. You can hear her energy and joy of art and illustration in her voice as she outlines her process. Mio finds a pen in her hand as an outlet. All right, who's calling the shots here?
04.
All right.
Catching flies on the podcast.
Off to a good
brought
start.
To you by Raid. There's no sponsor. Well, there is a sponsor, just not for that.
We ain't killing bugs.
We're not killing bugs.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today. Today, we're excited to have Mio Lindsay along with us here, a freelance illustrator and graphic designer with a love of sport, nature, and the mystical, who loves showing atmosphere and tales in the places that she draws. Mio, thank you so much for taking the time. And I should also include from Sweden. So thank you for making the time and hopping on with us.
Thank you for letting me be on. I'm very excited. I like talking about art and creative things and sports. So this is going to be very fun.
You are in the right place.
Yeah, for sure. Your work is absolutely fantastic, too. So I'm excited to dive in and hear a little bit more about your process and how you go about it and all that kind of stuff. So since people are going to be listening to the podcast, they can't see you. Behind you is a wall of just markers and pens and all sorts of colorful goodness. So you're very much in your element. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my room, I guess, in that weird period where I'm finishing up my degree. But I'm finishing up my degree, so I'm living at home. So this is my little like art supply corner in my home, and I collect pens, or rather, you know, I like, there's a lot of pens I've collected over the year. I like colors. They're nice. They're fun to draw with, but also they make great set decor. Like, why have any decorations when you can have pens?
Yeah, especially with all the colors you have. Do you have a favorite brand pen or like type of pen? I know there's so many different ones out there.
Yes, it really depends on purpose, but like, my to-go, I like sketching a lot with color, so my to-go pens for that is the Tombow Dual Tip Water Brush Pen. It's like these pens here, and they're like two tips. I love sketching with those. The Tombow Fudenosuke pens, they're like thin brush pens. No one can see these more than you guys. And then also the Pentel Sign pens that are also like thin tip, but a lot of cool colors. And other than that, I really like working with fountain pen. And right now I have like pink inks I work with a lot because I like pink. So those are like my to-go sketching supplies for like the purpose I need it, which I don't like sketching with pencil. So I have a pink mechanical colored pencil. So it's like pink pen or pink colored pencil. And then there's a lot of like markers in bright colors because that reflects me and my art.
Yeah, I guess let's dive into how you got into illustration and where you got your start in drawing or doodling or any of that kind of stuff early on in your life, and how you decided that was the path that you wanted to go down.
I think I've always been a person very drawn to creative things. Like when I was 7, it was origami, then it was fashion design, then it was making jewelry, then I got really into special effects. Then I got into graphic design, and like, I was always very interested in all these creative things. I wanted to create, I wanted to design with color, and like, I was always very drawn to that. And like, you know, from like 5 to 12, it was a lot of different things. experimenting, making stupid films, trying to sew clothes, you know, exploring creativity. And then sort of when I was like 12, 13, I started to be online a lot. And then I stumbled into digital art. And that is sort of when it clicked. I got my first tablet, I think, like, you know, like vacuum tablet when I was like 13. And so I started drawing digitally a lot. And I also started doing graphic design. It was bad, but like at that age, that like digital medium of creating really clicked for me. I liked the tools, I liked the colors. And at that point, it was a lot of, you know, anime girls, character designs, fan art for cartoons, and, you know, my interest when I was a kid. And then like as I got like 13, 14, it was art, it was drawing, it was sketching all the time. And I like knew when I was 13 that I wanted to be an illustrator. I wanted to be work with art. So like kind of through my entire teenage years, it was, oh, I started drawing Minecraft, and then I did online commissions on Minecraft servers that turned into logo commissions, that turned into like drawing people's D&D characters and posting on social media and like doing characters and taking on small jobs and just kind of running a company in high school. Like I was always interested in doing art, and I was, you know, very into animation, very into comics. You know, I wanted to work in those industries. So it was, you know, surrounding myself in that environment constantly since when I was a kid. And, you know, I wanted to study illustration. I wanted to study animation. The thing is, I live in Sweden and there's not a lot of education available. And when did I graduate high school? In 2020. What happened then? COVID. So my original plan was to, you know, try to study abroad, but so didn't happen. So instead I decided to study graphic design in Sweden, which in the end was a good choice because I also really like graphic design. I, you know, I don't have the same emotional connection to it as I do illustration. That's really where my heart lies. But, you know, the better I get at it and the more I learn what graphic design is, the more I like it. And so it was also in university I got into sports. And when I really found like, oh, this is what I want to work with and this is what I want to create. But, you know, the artist has, you know, been there for so long. And it's such an important part of myself. It's like I always think of art. Everything I do is connected to art. It's, you know, it is my life in that way. It's like my what I want to work with, what I want to study, my own passions. Like, it is all consuming.
I feel you on that. I feel you on that. It's when you're like almost become obsessive with something.
Yes.
You mentioned when you were 13 is when you really realized like, this is what I want to do. And like illustration was a big path that you were interested in.
Yeah.
I'm curious now, looking back, like, what are the things that inspire you in your day-to-day art? Like, what are some of the places and things that, you know, inspire you to create now?
I think there's a lot of things, but I think in general, it's the everyday life. I'm drawn to our everyday life stories. I'm so drawn to the world we live in, like the stories we experience, the people around us, the places, the animals in it, the nature, the travel. Like, I love reality. I love our world. But I also love, like, fantasy, magic. I was, you know, a huge nerd in everything fantasy and magic. And that kind of, like, well, can our world be magical? Can our world be mystical? Like, you know, the feeling when you're a hockey game, that is magical. The feeling when you're, you know, out in the sunset by the water eating a nice hamburger and, you know, doodling, that is magic. Like, talk with friends, like the feelings, the experiences, like that feeling of being alive and feelings how places, you know, how New York feels different from LA, from Stockholm, and the uniqueness and that, the uniqueness in buildings, the windows, the details, the birds that are there, the animals, like the little parts that make up our life, the little parts that make up our world. Like, how can we construct that? How can, you know, you take a hockey story and tell it? Can you use elements from the history, from the people? Can you visually portray that feeling of being alive? Like, that is very much what I'm inspired by. It's just like the root of being alive and experiencing things and how we translate that into art. And for me, a lot of that is places. It's nature. It's pretty colors, it's animals, it's the historical parts. I love retro design. Like, anything 1900s to, like, 1980, that's my jam. And so, you know, I'm very drawn towards those things. And also, like, food and fashion and a lot of outdoors things. I love mountains. I love forests. I love Colorado. But, you know, a lot of my inspiration is from nature. It's from the places. It's from the people. It's from the experiences and the feeling. But really, you know, I kind of like to say that I want to build reality. Like, just, I take inspiration from the things I like and care about, which is all of that. But also just the feelings. Sorry, long response.
Don't apologize. Oh, Justin, you're muted.
Oh, darn it. No, I was saying no apologies needed. I love your energy and how much you are stoked about all this stuff, because I do feel like designers see the world in a different way than other people, and that a lot of times plays out in their work and being able to see the details and leverage the details to make the designs hit home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really think the core of work is, you know, like, I like to look at it as an experience, right? Like, what are you experiencing in that moment? And personally, like, what am I experiencing in that moment? Or, you know, when I work with other teams, what are the fans experiencing in that moment? What are the players experiencing in that moment? And, like, how do I bring that visually to alive? How do I make someone look at an art piece and go, oh, I feel that. I feel the story. I feel the experience. Like, I think that is so powerful with art, is that you can capture those feelings. You can capture that heart in it in a different way than other mediums.
I love that. First of all, I think it resonates your connection with nature, because I think for me, I'm not a designer by any means. Not an illustrator, but when I look at like a flower or like a specific leaf, I feel like it can teach us like design principles almost, mm-hmm. right? Like maybe everything looks like very symmetrical, or maybe you can take that and turn it into an idea. And you kind of alluded to it, but when you start a project and you kind of mentioned like you try to capture and convey that feeling that people might have, but when walk us through your process when you start a project from scratch. Like, what is your process look like there?
Well, it depends if I have a specific idea or not. If I have a proper prompt, then I can start my process. If I don't have a prompt, then I spend like 3 months deciding what to draw, because I'm horrible with making decisions. But once we've gotten past that part, the first thing I do is I will say kind of, well, the first big step is research. But kind of before I do research, it is, okay, I'm doing this project. What are the important parts? What are my first impressions? What are my first visual impressions? What colors do I associate with? Like, that initial mood board, like, what are my first thoughts? What are my first feelings? What ideas do I want to convey? What I'm trying to do? If it's a pride piece, you know, I very much look, okay, I'm going to have to represent the queer community, the hockey community, the city, and, you know, like, trying to get all the initial like elements down. Like, you're working on a piece, you know, for a playoff game. Okay, I'm working with these two teams. What has the narratives been? Like, my impressions and feelings and kind of getting that roadmap. And once I have that roadmap, I use that to do research. Sometimes it's less research, sometimes more research, but it's reading articles, asking people, looking up the sign, a lot of Pinterest boards. But basically creating both an information and visual gallery of all the information I need to know. Like, if it is a city, then I, you know, I need pictures of the city. I need different buildings. Maybe it looks different in day, different light, and there's a cool photograph that's captured or something. Maybe there's some cool lore. Are there any landmarks? Is there anything history in those landmarks? Is there an animal plant? You know, like, getting all the references and symbols and things down, both visually and writing, because when I have that, then I do a lot of thumbnailing, a lot of sketching. I look at all my pictures, I draw sketches of all the pictures, I might write words, like, you know, taking the information and getting into sketch form, getting it down on paper so I have my canvas. And once I have my canvas of ideas and sketches, then I look at, okay, what do I like? What do I not like? What does this portray? What does that portray? What am I trying to do? And I sort of piece it together like a puzzle, trying to, okay, like, oh, this, I really like this motif because it both aligns with the hockey team and the city. That has a nice metaphor, a flow. Oh, I like, you know, the flow of water because it both represents like the flow of hockey, but also the water of the city. And I try to find connections and metaphors and symbols. And through that, I can develop ideas and concepts. I try to concretize them in usually 2 to 3 ideas. So I have those concrete stories. And then I usually like develop that concept and I sketch until I get to a place where I'm happy with. And then, you know, either I'll pick myself or the client will pick. And then when I have that, that's usually when I bring it in digital, where I, you know, I'll start with the colors. Like, honestly, before I start with any sketching, I will always pick the colors first, which is kind of different. But colors are so important in my process that if I don't have the colors, then it's not going to turn out good. So I color first, then thumbnailing, sketching, trying to get something. At this part, I usually know what I'm doing. So it's only like getting the sketch in a digital shape. And it's generally like sketch when I'm done with sketch, colored flats when I'm done, because I usually do like lineless geometric. If I'm not doing lineless, then it's usually get all the colors under the sketch, do the line art, and then color. And then when I've colored, it's like rendering, texturing, bringing it in like that illustrative process. Bit different if it's a graphic design project, but like most of my work, like 70% of the work is in that research phase. Like I will fill up 10 to 20 pages sketches. I do a lot of prep work and prep sketching because then when I have all of that, doing the finished piece is so easy because I have all the information in my head. I hold the pieces. I've done the exploring so then I can put it together. I find it hard to do that process while developing a piece, which is why I find graphic design a bit harder, because I find the graphic design, it is a lot more that the whole process of sketching, like the whole process to kind of develop it experimentally, you find something right. Whereas in my illustrative work, it's more like sketching, get that done, finish. It's a very different process, and I prefer that.
That's awesome. So I'm going to scale it all the way back to the very basics, to what you just said. Is there a particular color that you like to start your sketching off with or any of your work, or does it just depend on what you're doing?
It depends on what I'm doing, but my personal color is always pink. My favorite color is pink. I love pink. When it comes to a little work, I'm warmer colors. I will always be more warm towards warmer colors. Like sunset colors is what I say. Like yellow, mm-hmm. orange, pink, purple, dark blues. And also like cyan colors. Like cyans and like blues and lavenders and maybe that like bright sea blue. Some and kind of like cyany greens. I mean, starting more with greens more. But not like, and also always saturated, always bright colors, never desaturated, never brownish grayish, always bright, bold colors. But I will usually like, if it's for myself, I usually start sketching with pink or blue or something like that. If I, you know, it's a team or something, I'll sketch in a team's color or colors I associate with it. Like, oh, I'm doing a city piece. This city feels very watery. It feels very crystalline. Then it might be like blue and purple because that's what I associate with it. Like, either if it's personal, then, you know, it's those like warm colors. And if it's project based, then it's very much, well, am I feeling? What are my colors? Like, how does these colors feel? What do I associate with it? And then I sketch in those.
I want to go sketch now.
Team pink and team sunset colors over here. I know. I'm like, I have team a pen here. I've been doodling. I'm curious, like, if you have a pen and paper in front of you, how many times out of 10 are you having sketches and doodles on that piece of paper?
10 out of 10. Okay. 10 out of 10. I bring a sketchbook to dinner. I used to bring a sketchbook tube. All my classes I sketch. Like, I am also disabled. So my way for me, because I have autism, so a lot of my way to filter noise and to filter impressions in real life is through drawing. Because I, you know, cool. So drawing has also become a huge tool for me to deal with, you know, loud environments, stimulation, being restless, and I just draw. That is like a thing. I just draw and I feel okay. So for me, I'm always drawing because it really helps me listen and focus. And, you know, sometimes I'm drawing things, sometimes I'm drawing a piece, but, you know, I'm constantly drawing or doing something. When I'm watching a YouTube video, I'm drawing. When I'm, you know, at dinner, I'm drawing. When I'm out, I'm drawing. You know, if my brain is occupied but my hands aren't, I'm drawing. I'm sketching.
That's awesome. That
I love it.
That you just, you know, have the passion and love for drawing, and that it helps.
Yeah, I mean, it's like art is my life. You know, I barely have any thought that isn't related to art. It goes so deep to it that it just kind of consumes everything, which is sometimes a bad thing when you work with it, because it can get very, it can get a lot. I have a lot of anxiety. I have a lot of stress connected to it, a lot of insecurities. But the joy that it brings is, you know, worth that. And I kind of see it as, you know, if you are so passionate about the thing, it makes sense. Anxiety happens around that thing because that's what you care about. Like, if you are anxious about creating art, like, if you care about it, obviously your anxieties are going to be around that thing. Like, if you know, if you didn't care about it, like, you wouldn't have be scared of it, you know? Like, I think sometimes those, like, anxieties and the fearful emotions are necessarily good, but I think they are necessary when you something becomes your life, because, you know, at least for me, like, that is always going to be part of my life, and it's, you know, it is going to show up in the things I care about.
So you talked about how you draw inspiration from, you know, nature and colors and all that. At what point did that start to translate over to sport? And, like, how did you get into creating and designing and illustrating for sport?
I think inspiration is very similar, because for me, sports are stories. For me, sports are stories in real life. They're emotions, they're, you know, they're stories, they're epics, their mythology, like, sports are that. The arenas are places, players are people, they're legends. Like, there's so much of that character, there's so much of those stories, of those narratives that are so interesting portrayed visually. Like, the idea of Claude Giroux, my favorite hockey player, as, like, a tragic god who got cursed and cursed over again, or the Maple Leafs as a team who continually gets cursed and has the roots of City Toronto, can never escape it, you know, like, or the Florida Panthers, that the Panthers keep clawing and fighting, or the whole Vegas narrative, like, you know, how they start, like, from misfits and come together, and then they become a shining diamond, and then they become the villain, but they're in the heroes of their own narrative, and then they win a cup. Like, they're stories, and that fascinates me. And I think I got into hockey quite late. I got into hockey when I was 19. And I got into hockey through, not Sweden, not my everyday life, because that was very, you know, sports, masculine, you know, very not me, and I didn't feel welcome. But I got into it through the online communities, people who wrote articles about players, who talked about the narratives, talked about the stories, other queer people. Like, that perspective of sport, where the story was in focus, the emotion was in focus, where the team was in focus, and that really appealed to me. I got drawn to it. You know, I cared about these players. I cared about these characters. And for me, I instantly got to start drawing them. I got really inspired to, you know, my first design I ever did for sports was a redesign of the Flyers logo inspired by flowers. So, you know, like, instantly, oh, cool. I had that connection of, you know, nature and the world and trying to create teams through those elements. And yes, there's something about sports. I love the real world. Don't get me wrong, I like fiction, but I love the real world more. I love real stories. I love news. Like, I love making real things told as if they're fictional. I love, you know, treating things after the magic world and stuff like that. So sports became a very natural way for me to express my creativity, because I like working around brands. I like working around existing things. I obviously have my own ideas, but I like taking a thing and being like, how can I change this? How can I design around this? How can I work around it? And sports are that. There's so much to work around. There's so many little stories. And when I got in hockey, that clicked. That felt right. It was like, I love this. This is cool. I connect with this emotionally. Like, I want to draw and draw and draw this sport. And I kept drawing this sport. And then I got here. Like, it, you know, that connection of art and storytelling and sport felt so natural to me. Like, the things that I like doing with my art, which is, here, have thing. Do a cool thing with thing. That is what sport is to me. Like, it is a thing with a lot of stories, and then I can make things around that thing.
I'm sitting here looking at this Vancouver Canucks logo that you did, and
yeah,
you can correct me if I'm wrong. Is this a Pride logo?
Yes.
It's not the first thing I saw, right? I think a lot of times when we see Pride logos, you see the rainbow, like, pretty objectively a big part of the logo, or it takes over the logo. I think what's incredible about this, just hearing your nature, thought process and background, is that you dove in that, like the evergreens that are popular up in the Pacific Northwest. You have the different animals in the sea, like down at the bottom. So there's like an evolutionary look to this, nature driven, and it's just so beautifully done that it's more about the elements of it and drawing from the inspiration of the local people and the origins that you were talking about. I just want to hear a little bit more about the process of how you created this, how many sketches. You said you usually do 10 to 20 sketches. Can you give us a little bit more insight into how you developed this?
Sure. So the design behind that logo was like, obviously, like that wasn't the original idea. Like the original idea I had was, there was not really like an original idea. Like I could probably like, you know, create Pride Vancouver logo. And this, I had done a couple of Pride designs before, but this was my first PRC and this was my like first big NHL job. So I did have a lot of experience with it, but like the process was like research Vancouver. I talked with my Vancouver friends. I have a lot of friends who live in Vancouver. It's been a city I've been considering moving to when I was younger. So it is a city that I, you know, had a lot of information about and a personal connection to. So it was, you know, asking those people, doing the research, reading up on it, you know, like being invested in that place was so important. Understanding that place was so important. Having queer people from Vancouver stories in it was so important. Like, you know, in a way, I was a messenger. So getting all of that information and research was very important. And when I read, it reminded me a lot of Sweden. It reminded me a lot of the lakes and the trees I'm grown up around. I'm grown up in a really big lake. I'm grown up around nature. I'm like very, it's a very, very different from here. You know, having been there, it's a very different city. But it was a lot, like nature is very personal to me. It's, you know, I'm grown up in nature. I'm a very outdoorsy person. So there were a lot of parts of Vancouver that resonated with my own experience in Sweden and how I grew up. And so it felt natural. Okay, if it's the nature that sticks out to me, if it's the nature of the city, the water that speaks to me and I have a personal connection to, and it's such an important part of the city, I want to go there. I think a couple of the earlier concepts, I had an idea of like the breaking the ice. So it'd be a lot of the reflections of like people and the reflections and stuff like that. You know, I had that idea because, you know, the worker breaks through the ice. So I wanted to play with that a bit and, you know, like different queer stories and how they connect. So, you know, I had a lot of those ideas. And the other idea was sort of, you know, working with the nature and sort of creating like a narrative from water to sky. And I don't really fully remember how that came about because it was like 2 years ago now. But I do remember like kind of just sketching at it and seeing like, oh, wait, the sunset works with the pride colors, the trees work. Oh, I like to see, like, you know, that kind of organically, when I looked at it, I'm like, well, this could be queer. This could be pride. Like, it's creating a world. It's creating a story. So that kind of design came kind of through sketching and through brainstorming and kind of working with the Canucks. We sort of ended up in a place, well, this looks cool. This works. I like this idea. And then through that, you know, I sketched more and I brainstormed and I like, you know, figured out where the elements would go, what they could represent and a journey. And sort of once I had that like nature idea, I was like, wait, this represents a queer journey. This is a queer journey of, you know, working from beneath the ocean up to the ice, breaking through, finding community and then wandering up in the sky for freedom. So it's like, well, that is the journey of being queer. And it's the story of Vancouver and also represents the hockey team. And, you know, that is sort of where those stories met. And when the queer narrative and the narrative on the Canucks met, I was like, this is what I need to do. I need to find a story that works for a story that can represent both queerness and both Vancouver. And when we found that, I felt very happy with it because that felt like a design that, you know, it wasn't about the rainbow colors. It wasn't about the flag. It was about the queer story and the people behind it and the story they tell. And it was about the city, the nature, the space we live in, the place we breathe, the place we take inspiration from. Like, it was capturing that. And that was really important to me.
That is amazing. I'm in awe of you right now, just because I think A, the way you describe your process is incredible, but also, right, you mentioned working with the Canucks, working with the team. I'm curious, mm-hmm. and you it's funny because you say, I kind of forgot, you know, how we got to this certain place. And I think that's such a like universal feeling for a lot of creatives that they're like, mm-hmm. I don't know how I got to this, but I just, something happened in the creative process and I got stuck and then I had to find a solution. When in those moments, when you kind of are either struggling or you feel like something's not right with an illustration or a piece that you're working on, like, what do you do to kind of take a step back, if at all? Or do you just kind of power through? Do you make more sketches? Like, what is your process for the moments when you feel like you're getting stuck?
The first thing I do, I talk with my friends. I'm a very collaborative person, and I'm a person who likes to talk a lot of my thoughts a lot and get a lot of input on it. So the first thing, I go to my artist friends or somebody door for me, like, hey, can you look at this? Can we talk through it? Do you have an idea? If they have any thoughts, like, talking through it and brainstorming, because usually that will help me look out. I do it all the time. Like, if I don't have someone to ball an idea with, like, it's not going to work out. I need that bouncing back and forth. I need that feedback. Yeah. So that is normally where I go. If that doesn't work, or if anything else, I think, everyone says this, but taking a step back, taking a walk, going outside, breathing, going on a bike, swimming if it's summer, you know, clearing my head, doing something else, like, that helps a lot. But if I feel stuck, I ask myself, why do I feel stuck? Is it because I don't like how it looks? Is that I feel like it's missing something? Is it that I think the client is not going to be happy? Like, what is the issue? Because if it's like, oh, I don't like this, I think the client is not going to be happy with it, like, well, that's probably most of the time my own insecurities, so I can ignore it. But okay, it's like, oh, I don't feel like this is telling the story, right? Okay, well, is there something I can include? Is there something I can change? What is missing? What is not working? Is something in the conversation? Like, if, you know, brainstorming doesn't work for it, like, really, for me, problem solving really helps. Like, sometimes you need to drop it. Sometimes you need to go outside. Sometimes you need to do a sketch. Sometimes you need to restart. But a lot of times for me, I just kind of need to problem solve. Say, why do I not like this? Why am I stuck? And sometimes that's, okay, I'm stuck because I don't like this. And sometimes I'm like, well, it would take like 2 hours, 10 hours to change. I'm not going to be bothered by it. So I'm just going to push through anyways. And sometimes it's like, well, I don't like this. It's worth changing it. So, you know, I'm going to go back and change. So for me, it's a lot of, you know, brainstorming, figuring things out, balling with other people, and that, but also making sure I do get space away. I understand that, oh, my own perspective of this is necessarily not true. And also, I often forget that if I don't like it, I usually sometimes just need to draw it finished, because when it's finished, it'll usually look good. Like, because if something gets like, I don't like this, I'm like, it's because it's halfway done. It's because you're in that stage where it's not finished. And that is a feeling I have a lot, especially with graphic design. For me, graphic design is, well, I don't like this for the entire process until that one moment when I'm like, oh, wait, this works. Illustration is not the same, but like, when it's like that, I so easily get, well, this is bad, I want to give up. But it's like, no, you just have to trust the process. You just have to be patient and work through it. And if it doesn't work, then you try again. But you have to try at least.
Great. I love that.
With that being said, you bring up a good point about you not liking something or a client not liking something. How do you, if a client disagrees with a decision that you made, or, you know, a process or product that you delivered to them, how do you handle that, and how do you kind of reverse engineer that and get back on track to what ultimately they're wanting to do?
I cry.
I do that as well. So.
I do that as well. That's a daily occurrence.
It depends. If it's like queer work or very personal work, then I will probably take a stance. If they say something I don't like, then I will be like, hey, as a queer artist, this might not work. Like, if it's a very personal thing and I'm telling my own personal story, I take a bit more agency. I'm a bit more forward with it. Like, hey, like, you know, like, I think this is important because, after all, I'm representing my identity and I'm representing my queerness. And while it's important the client is happy, it is always important that I do it right. So those kind of jobs differ. But it depends. Like, if a client wants changes, I'll do the changes. And if I don't agree with them, kind of what I'll try to do is, okay, but how can I do this in my favor? If they want this changed and I don't like that direction, what is the best direction I could take where I'm the most happy with it? You know, if they're, for example, if they don't like the color scheme with another color scheme, well, could I do color combinations and stuff like that? Could I include like this shape instead of this work better? Like trying to find a solution around it, I think is important. But like if a client goes to me like, hey, I don't like this, I think for me, it is quite personal. But also what I have to understand is that I'm not working for me. I'm not creating my art. It's not my personal work. It's not my expression. It's not my feeling, which makes it harder queer work. But otherwise, like, this is not my work. I'm creating something for the client. I'm creating something for the team. And the most important thing there is I deliver a product. I finish something. If it's good or not, if I think that objectively, that does not matter. Like, what I think of it, that does not matter. Like, all that matters is that the client is happy with it. All that matters is that I get it delivered. Because a lot of times I will be working on pieces that are really hard for me, where I'm struggling with, and it can be hard pushing through. But like, what matters there is, it is not for me. I'm not drawing it. I'm doing a job. I'm presenting a product. Like, it feels cold, but sometimes when you work with art, you have to separate yourself from it and be like, well, this is a product. I'm giving it to the client. I can think it's crap, but most of the time, you know, it's like it has to be delivered. And genuinely, most times, clients are very nice. They're like, oh, I don't like this. Do you have an idea? Can we change it? Like, a lot of time when I work with clients, it's not this, no, we don't like this. It's an open discussion. It's, you know, a back and forth. And so that's also where I try to meet the client. It's like, not be like, I don't like this. Like, well, how can we work with it? Where do we agree? Where do we not agree? Like, I think sometimes as a freelancer, you can forget that it is a discussion. It is a feedback process. It's back and forth. Like, treating it more of a conversation and trying to understand, well, why do you want the change? What are you trying to get it done? Because if I get that perspective, I might be able to offer a suggestion that might be better in the long end. Like, I think it's very important to understand, like, well, they're probably worried about marketing or selling. They want a different angle. Like, because I think not most of them, sometimes we can villainize the client if they don't like our work. And I think it's so important understanding their messages and their motives and keeping it very open in the discussion can also help. Like, being like, well, okay, I might disagree with you on this, but what about we do this instead? You know, that dialogue helps me a lot.
That is excellent advice. And I was taking notes as you were talking, treating feedback as a discussion and a dialogue instead of like a fight or, you know, one versus the other. I think that's something that every single one of us can improve upon, you know, and a lot of times it's with experience that you can get to that place. But I'm curious, you know, you've worked with the NHL at the league level, you've worked with multiple teams within the NHL. What's your favorite team? Not the team that you've worked with, but your favorite team to watch and see.
I mean, my favorite team is the Flyers. No, that's like my favorite team. I'm a Flyers fan. Then I have my little like teams that I like, but like my second favorite teams, which is Avs, Sens, and Wild. I think those are the three teams that I like care a lot about too.
In that order too?
Not in that order. I would say they're kind of the same little level. It's like those three. And then, I mean, I like all NHL teams. I'm that girl who just likes good stories. All teams have a good story, whether it's a villain or hero story. So I'm like, sometimes I'll be like super into the Panthers for 2 months. And then I'll have a phase of being really into the Flames for a month. And then it will be the Knights for 2 months. Like, I kind of jump between teams a lot of the things. But Flyers is like my ride or die. They're like the favorite team. They're, you know, the team I like the most, but of the teams I've actually played in real life, I think the most exciting games have been with the Avs. So the Avs, I love Colorado a lot, so they're probably the second favorite.
How did you become a Flyers fan? Like, when did that begin?
Well, that kind of happened by accident. So I got into hockey during the 2020 playoff bubble, and when that was happening, the Flyers were having a really impressive run. You know, they had a great season. They were having that narrative. They had they had that really strong narrative of the underdogs who are here to win. And I love those kind of narratives. And the friends I started talking with was real into the Flyers. And so I sort of just the flyers are interesting. They're fun. I care about their story. I like the orange. I like, you know, I felt that connection with it. I like the story. I want to root for these boys. I like the players. I like the dynamics. And, you know, I was invested in it. So during that playoff run, I became very, very invested in the Flyers and their story, both through what they were doing, but also since a lot of people around me were Flyers fans. And then that just kind of stuck. Like, it was the first team that grabbed my attention into when I got into hockey. And then that stuck, for better or worse. But, you know, so I think it was very much just the right time, right place. If I got into hockey 2 years later, I probably would have been a different team. But during that time, during that era of hockey, the Flyers was the team that I got stuck to with. I mean, that's kind of the fun thing about being a European fan, is you can just kind of pick which team you like the most, because you don't have a city allegation.
I love that. Do you have any preferred teams in terms of their design work and their creative work that you're like, oh, wow, like this team, they have it right. Their brand is on point. Or do you not want to, if you don't want to pick favorites, I understand that too.
No. I think the obvious one is the Kraken. I think the Kraken is very much in line with my own aesthetic, my own storytelling, like the Kraken is that like obvious answer. Another obvious answer, I think, is the Panthers. Love what they've been doing recently. Love what they're doing with the visuals. Love a little bit of creatively. I'm just going through my mental register of the teams quickly. They don't exist anymore, but what Arizona was doing with their design, genuinely very fun and creative. And I really like that kind of design work a lot. And I, you know, cool logo, cool language, unique colors. I think that's very fun. I really like what the Devils have done with their special jerseys. I think they've done a great job with that, working with local New Jersey artists. I think that's awesome. Oh, the Canes. I think the Canes. The Canes have a really good branding. They have a really good, like, design, aesthetic, social media language. I love that a lot. But off the top of my head, I think those are kind of the brands that I get stuck with most. And if we're going to talk about brands that have potential, but they're not doing enough with it, I have on top of my head, but I genuinely think that Original Six have so much good potential for design, like retro stuff or being more creative, but they just don't because they're so stuck in that branding. Like, I feel like all NHL teams have that potential to be more fun. Wait, the Devils. The Devils could do so much more than they do. Like, they could play into the Pine Barrens, the Jersey Devil more, the Myth, the lore, the darkness, the forest. Like, there's so many, like, elements a lot of teams have that they don't play in because hockey, you know? Like, what if they had, like, Nico Hischier standing in a dark forest with horns? Wouldn't that be cool? You know? I think a lot of teams have that, like, fantastical elements they could work with, and they don't.
If you had the chance to design or work with a team outside of hockey right now, who would it be? Or a sport outside of hockey?
I genuinely think that I would love to do something with like cycling or F1 or those kind of sports that go to a lot of different places and a lot of different cities, because I love drawing cities and I love drawing environments. So I think doing like touristy posters for each of the cities could be very, very cool. So that is kind of like a project I think I would be really, really fun to work with, is, you know, being able to do different cities, different aesthetics, stuff like that, I think would be awesome. And beyond that, like, dream project, and this could be like really any sport, but playoffs, like being able to creatively direct the entire art for a playoff would be so fun. That's not a specific sport, but just like, or the final match, like that story of these teams are meeting. Like, I would love to do that. That would be very, very fun. And otherwise, I think baseball. I think, like, visually, I think baseball has so fun, like, retro old design. It goes so far back in American history. And there's the bats, there's the outfits. You know, it's a very, like, fun sport with a lot of different stadiums. It's very, like, also city and place-based in that way. Like, I think I would enjoy that.
That's incredible. We gotta get you with another team.
Yeah, I mean, it's sport. I'm like,
I really do want to break into other sports. It's been a lot this year because I've been finishing up my thesis, you know, working a lot on just grad things. So it's, you know, I've been taking a bit of break from freelance stuff, and you know, now I'm getting ready to get back into it. But it's scary.
Yeah, how do you balance everything between the freelance? It sounds like you have a bit of a pause that you've, you know, put on yourself, but in general, how do you balance all of the things that you're doing?
Well, I don't. Well, basically, I, through my entire sports art, I was in university full time. And so what happened is that university fell back a bit, and I focused so much on freelance that I, you know, I'm taking a bit of extra time with my university and doing it. Because basically, my school is nice. They will let me do the thesis at home and, you know, over time. So I don't. So what that led to is I spent a lot of time building up freelance and building up art during university. And that took time for me. That took energy. I got quite burnt out from it. I did way too much work in way too little time. So much happened in a year. Like, my first NHL gig was in, like, April of 2021. So a lot of it happened, like, so instantly, so shortly, and so intensely. So that took a lot out of me and took a lot of time. And so now it's, like, that happened. But, you know, I want to finish my degree. I want to find my own creative language again because I felt sports world has a very specific aesthetic. It has a very specific type of art style. And I did feel like it was allowed to thrive in my own art style and expression. But I also felt very pressured to draw in a certain way, to draw realistic portraits, do realistic players, do that kind of art. And that's not me. I like doing environments. I like doing design work. I like doing infographics. I like bold colors. I like mythical redesigning. So the past year has really been like kind of trying to, I got burned out. I did too much. So I realized that. And so now I'm sort of working back to a place where I can feel comfortable in my work, where I'm not going to take on too much again, where I can enjoy what I do more. So, you know, with that response to how I balance things is, I use a lot of calendars. I use a lot of lists. I go to therapy. I talk with a lot of my friends. I try to keep a pretty short schedule so I know my energy. I try to keep clients to update, you know, with everything so they know what's going on. I try to have simple priorities, you know, basic organizational systems and trying to do one thing at once, you know, all of that. But in the end, I did too much. I took on too much. It got too intense for me. So with that, I realized, you know, you have to figure things out and you have to take a step back and, you know, heal from it.
When you finish a project, if you could describe that feeling in three words, what are three words to describe, like, a successful finished piece?
Nap time.
I love that. That is well, so real.
I would, like, or, yeah, like, I it's hard to find three words very quickly, but I generally, I would say relief, pride, happiness, like that, like, dropping my backpack. It's like, I spent, not sports related, but I spent the past week working on, like, a graphic design project for like the entire week, and it was doing layout for a PDF, and it was so like illustrated infographic stuff. So it's like a lot of heavy work in just one project for the entire week. And after I was done, I'm like, whew, I can escape this world. I can breathe. I can do my other commissions. I can do other work. Like, especially with big projects, you get so lost in that world that when it's finished, you're like, vacation time. Like, it's really fun, but just, there's something about being so sucked into a creative project that's all that sucks up in your brain that is very fun and very exciting. But when it's done, you're like,
whew. All right, I'm going to do this for Karina. Take a second to think about this. You get a project, random project. Let's say that she is the client. You have 30 mm-hmm. seconds to come up with as many colors to combine together to make something randomly for Karina. What colors are you going to go with? So we're going
to... Oh, just like... or just like based on what I know for of Karina now.
Hold on, Karina, you got time to pull your stopwatch up?
I don't. Yeah, we'll do 30 seconds. What is it? 30 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let me set okay. it up. Ready, set, go.
Okay, I'm just going based on what she's wearing and the vibe. But okay, cyan, the t-shirt cyan, we're going with that. Like bright, bold cyan. I'm thinking pool. I'm thinking water. I'm thinking happy on the beach. I'm thinking sandy colors. I'm thinking a bit of orange. I'm thinking like that, like, you know, underneath the pool, kind of looking up at the sky. Maybe you can see like someone lying on like a pool mattress. Maybe it's like a really abstract kind of like 50s mid-century illustration vibe. And there's like these bright sunny colors sparkling in the water, like with a little sparkles because you have very happy energy. So it's like that relaxing, bubbly, happy vibe.
I want to see
this. I
love
this so much.
Yeah, the visual that you gave is much, much better.
The colors, like, I feel like you should write too, because like the way you describe things is so beautiful. I loved the
thank you
looking from underneath the pool. That's such like a not universal, maybe not everybody's gone, but for me, I'm like, I know that color, I know like the sky with the blue and then the chlorine of the blue. That's really cool. I appreciate you. I'll come back if my meeting ends early, so I'll put y'all on mute. I'll be here, but not really.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I was kind of visualizing like an ocean in a pool, like where you have all the coral and all that.
In my head, I'm thinking maybe it's like kids' toys. Maybe it's like kids' coral toys that have dropped. Like that kind of like artificial beach vibe, but it's like in a pool and you're like, it is that kind of tacky pool vibe, but it's like creating an environment. I kind of love that aesthetic. I'm like obsessed with like 40s, 50s, 60s in general. Like that aesthetic is so good to me.
Love it.
So we've talked a lot about your work, illustration, the vibrant colors, the magical nature of which you think about the work.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about the work that you do for teams for some of their Pride work or Pride Month logos or other materials. Let's jump into talking about you as a LGBTQ plus member in the community. What has been your experience as someone who works in this space in sports as a member of the LGBTQ plus community?
I will say, I think a lot of my work has been online. A lot of it is, you know, online. I'm not engaged in like the actual physical sports space a ton. So I think that generally makes my experience better because the people I meet, the people they talk about a lot of times are the people engaged in my work and my queer identity. So it means a lot of times, even though the space might not necessarily be super inclusive, that is a lot of the times what I am met with and how people talk to me and like the vibe I get. You know, when I'm reached out by teams to do queer work, they want me. They want my queerness. They want my prideness. Like there is an inherent sense of acceptance in the work I do. Like I have had the luck to be able to be myself and have my identity and be let that be a strength in sport. So for my own experiences, I had a couple of negative things, especially during, I think it was last year when Pride jerseys got banned. There were teams, won't say any names, teams and organizations that were a bit shady, a bit, you know, didn't talk about the topics in the best way for me. And I was kind of new, like a sour reality of like, yeah, well, once public opinion changes, once rules changes, teams change too, you know. So I've had that experience of it changing pretty quickly. And, you know, when there's not that goodwill of wanting to represent, there is a bit of you know, why are we doing this? There's people who don't like it. Maybe we're scared. So I've had that meeting, but like generally online, do I get homophobic comments on Pride of Art sometimes? Yeah, but like, if, I don't really care in a way because they're so just like some random person. Like, it would be different if someone did it for me in real life. We're like, hey, like that is uncomfortable. That's happened. I don't like that. But when it's online, it's easier to distance myself. And so I think I'm very aware that I'm a bubble. I'm very aware that I am in a bubble where I've been welcome, I've been with good people, I've been met in very good ways. Like, you know, that is my experience, is in especially on the queer hockey Twitter. Like, there are other queer people. People know me for I'm queer, so a lot of queer people will find me, and people who like my work are usually LGBTQ friendly. So that has given me a safe bubble and a freedom to be in. But there is that fear of, you know, I have done a lot of queer work. I love representing being queer, but I do want to work with other things and do other art. I just don't want to do queer work, especially since I think it's important to give space to other artists. I've done a lot of other work, and I think there's room for a lot of other queer voices in hockey. You know, I want to move on to other work, other projects, other sports, other teams. And there is a fear of that. There is a fear of being so connected to my queer identity and people being like, she's a queer girl, she's a pride girl, she does the pride work. That is what we will hire for her for, because that's, you know, what's happened. When it's, you know, as an artist, I'm a lot more. I love representing my identity in my work, but I love drawing so much more. And so that is a fear I have, is that I sort of become locked in that queer image. Like, oh, she's a pride artist. You know, people see me, oh, she's the artist who does the cool queer work, and people love that work. But it's like, there's a label in that. There's a, you know, there's a marking of, oh, she does the queer work. That is what we're going to hire for her. We won't hire for a playoff poster or anything like that, which has happened. Like, I've been hired for those things, but I'm very happy to feel safe in my identity, but there's also a fear of, everyone knows I'm queer. Every sports team will know my work is queer. Everyone will know my identity. And so if they're homophobic and don't like me, they can look, oh, she does pride work, we're not going to hire her. Like, there is that fear of being so loud and open, moving into a space that's not just pride work. Am I going to be received the same way? Is my work going to be received the same way? Is people going to want to work with me, you know? Because it's like, you know, my success have been with pride work mainly, some other things too, but, you know, moving on to that, moving away from that, trying to establish a career is quite scary, because, you know, how do I find a new footing? How do I find a new landing? How do I build a new brand? How do I combine that part of me with the other part of me in the sports? It's kind of a scary thing.
So with that being said, do you kind of take joy in when teams do incorporate you, knowing your background, and embrace you as an artist to work on things, like, especially like during Pride Month, whether it's a jersey or a graphic or an illustration?
Yes, I think it makes me very happy knowing they want to spotlight queer creators and knowing they want to work with an artist, because I think it's so important to work with queer voices in the space. So knowing that teams care about that, they care about doing things right, they care about hiring queer artists, they want to do pride in the right way, because some teams don't. So, well, some teams do it right, some teams do it manually, you know, but like, I think hiring creators and artists is one of the best ways you can support things. And I think a lot of teams, you know, they hire one artist, but like, hire 10 artists, do a unique t-shirts, do a combined poster, hire more people, hire local people, hire non-local people. I think, you know, I've been hired, you know, in New Jersey, but I think there's potential for teams to hire a lot of people to uplift a lot of queer voices. You know, it doesn't have to just be that one jersey artist. There can be a jersey artist and a t-shirt artist and a poster artist, you know, like, there's, I think, a lot of potential for to uplift a lot of queer voices, and I'm happy to have been one of those queer voices, and I'm happy to have had opportunities I've had. But I think there's so many brilliant queer artists in hockey that also deserve that space and voice to be heard. And I think it's so complicated when you do art so connected to your identity. And, you know, it's a unique experience. Because it's so personal and it's also commercial, and that will always be a weird bridge to stand on.
And on the flip side of that, is there any worry that you may get boxed into only, oh, we'll only reach out when it's this type of product, or if it's only during Pride Month or a Pride product? Or do you think that working with the teams that you've worked with, and hopefully future opportunities that they grasp on you, like, yes, that is a part of your identity, that's some work that you've done, but you're also capable of doing far beyond just that?
I think I think I'm worried about it because I think I've experienced it a lot. I have had other opportunities. I've done other work. I've done a lot of non-queer work in hockey. But trying to step, I'm a growing artist. I'm young. I'm, you know, a lot of the things have been kind of off chance, you know, social media, you know, it's not like I'm a stable freelance artist who has a bunch of gigs. Like, that's not me. I've been lucky. I have a social media audience. I've done work for NHL. I've done queer work. Like, that's kind of where I am. So there's a worry about wanting to break out of that and wanting to break it into a full-fledged career after graduating, that that's not going to be possible, that that's going to be hard just because people will see me, oh, she did a queer work, she can't do other things. So there's a big fear in that. There's a big fear in trying to break outside of that mold and doing other things and teams wanting to take a chance on it, because I think with the prior thing, I've proven myself. People know I can do that well. People know itself. Like, but me as a normal artist, there's not that same confidence behind it. Like, there's not the same part of it. And so I have to build that up and I have to network. And there's a stress in that. Will I succeed? Will I manage? Will it be enough? Because I don't know. It's scary. I'm young. I don't fully know what my career is going to look like. I've been in a year where it's been a bit slower. I've been figuring things out. It's, you know, trying to get other gigs, trying to, you know, sit onto myself. And so it's like, what now? What next? Well, what am I outside of this? What? Who am I as an artist in the sports space beyond my queer identity? I've been figuring that out, but it's scary because it's like, will teams want to hire me? Will other sports want to hire me? Will people want me for my graphic design? I don't know that stuff. And I think that's the quite a natural part of being a young artist, because I'm a young artist who managed to have success out of being noticed on social media. It was very much, if you know, like a once in a dream thing, like that kind of thing. It's like I got noticed and it helped me and it steered on me this path, and obviously it's combined skill and luck, but it has that feeling of what happens when the light of like the spotlight disappears. What happens then?
I mean, the work on your side is incredible. So I think you're
absolutely,
you have, I mean, more, you're showcasing more than just the Pride content that you've created and everything too. One question that I'm curious about, you talked about everyone knows that you are queer. What was the decision to do that? And was that scary when you decided to make that known to everybody on social media?
No, like the thing is, I wasn't on mainstream hockey Twitter. I wasn't in, like, the sports space. I was coming from fandom spaces, animation stuff, like, where being queer is very normal. I was coming from hockey Tumblr. Like, there was the people, all my friends were queer. Like, I was so used with that being a normal thing and all my friends being queer. And my account was originally just to, like, have fun with friends, you know, like, my personal account was very much just a fandom account. And then I didn't feel bad posting that I was queer because, you know, it wasn't connected to my name. I was having fun. It was for my friends. I had a very small audience. And then it blew up. And then, you know, the stars saw my work. So I got hired to do a Pride design. And so the first work I did in hockey was Pride. And at that point, you can't escape it. At that point, it kind of becomes, well, okay, I get this is an opportunity. I love doing this. I can build a career from this. And this is how it got started. This is what works. So, you know, that becomes a must of it. But it kind of just started out having fun as being me. And I, you know, I have a very accepting family. I have always had very accepting friends. I've always been in mainly queer spaces online. You know, I'm not grown up around sports. I'm grown up around art. And, you know, so it wasn't really like an intentional choice. It just kind of happened that I also got stuck in the more mainstream like sports media after the kind of more queer spaces. So it wasn't really scary, but there is, I am scared in a way now because it's like, well, I can't go back. I can't hide it. It's always going to be there.
Two questions that I have. One I'll start with is, what would you like to see next in your career path? You know, you're finishing up your thesis and school and all of that. You've worked with some NHL teams. What would you like to see happen next, or like be a next goal for you?
Okay. I think I want to work with other sports. I want to expand myself from just hockey. I want to work more with women's sports. I want to work in more North American sports, but also more in Sweden and more in Europe. So I want to work in a lot of different sports. I want to do work in both, you know, if I had the possibility as a freelance illustrator, it would be work in kind of my newer style, which is, you know, I kind of was unhappy with how I was drawing in 2021, 2022. So a lot of my newer art is quite different. So my goal is to be able to establish that style, like the mid-century, geometric, very nature, very like graphic, postery design. But really, I want to do merch. I want to do sports merch. I want to do sweaters, hoodies, jerseys, keychains, and I want to do maybe some cool posters and infographics, editorial art. I want to move more towards the space where illustration and graphic design meet, because that is where I thrive and what I love. And I want to be able to build, basically, I want to build my own identity and a brand as an artist and designer, and to be able to be who I feel like now in sports, but have the opportunity to work beyond hockey with smaller and bigger teams, and also have the opportunity to do, well, the dream would be to do merch. The dream would be to do that kind of design.
Awesome. And the second question is, what is some advice? I know that you mentioned you're quite young in this journey and on this path, but what is some advice that you would give to, you know, people who may now be in the shoes that you were in a few years ago, who are, you know, wanting to break into creativity in the sports industry, may not have a big following in name at this point? What advice would you offer to them?
I would say, for me, what's worked is doing what I love. So I think do what you love and do what you burn for. But also, if you will want to grow an audience, figure projects out. Like a lot of I kind of got my audience built because I was doing botanical logos. I was doing pride jerseys, like free designs. Like find a niche. Like, could you be the person who does hockey teams as fruit art? You know, like, or could you be the one who does like weird little worlds inside of football? So like, for me, finding a niche, finding a part of art that works and doing that to engage social media, having a series helps growing. I think that's a good strategy if you want to grow your audience. And for more creative things, I think what I've learned is don't think an opportunity is above you. Like, take any opportunity you can get, take anything you can find, talk with people. And obviously, be paid fairly and all of that. But I think a lot of the times you can think, oh, maybe I'm not good enough for this. Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe this is better for someone else. No, like, try it. Do it. Like, don't have those expectations. Whether it's you thinking you're good, too good, or you're too bad. Like, do it anyways. Take opportunities. Be humble. Learn from that. Talk with people. Be social. Engage in it. And I also think, just relax, just calm down. Like, it is, you are going to be able to fail. It's going to be hard, and that's okay. Like, if if you get stressed, take a break, do something else, or do it anyways. Like, I think for me, I'm a very anxious person. And for me, I think learning to calm down, learning to breathe, learning to have fun with it, learning to let myself do the art that I love is very important. And I think sometimes when you grow as an artist, you have to adapt to, you know, what is wanted. But if that makes you feel bad, which it does for me, don't do it. Do your own race. Do your own thing. Realize when doing your own race is good, and realize when you need to adapt. Find a balance in that, but don't let that overtake you. Like, I'm extremely afraid of doing art for other sports because I'm like, oh, well, people don't want me there. I don't know a ton about it. There's other good sports artists. Why am I needed? Like, that is a lot of my own insights. They're like, no. Fuck that, like, try it, do it. Like, the only one who's setting to stop to you not doing things is yourself. The only thing, person who is setting those boundaries are yourself and your expectation of the world. And so if you are like me and experience a lot of those feelings, understand where they're coming from and why are you afraid of them, and just try to find ways to break through it and let yourself have fun.
That's a great response and great advice. I mean, great mm-hmm. advice. Like, we get in our way a lot, and sometimes we blame mm-hmm. other people, and sometimes it's just us in our own head, and we just gotta get out of it.
And Yeah, I've had like a giant art block for a year, and it's just a bunch of mental stuff in my head. And I've been unworking that. I've been, you know, it's therapy. It's been a long process to get out of that. But it's like, in the end, I'm realizing it's just myself. It's just my silly little brain being a little silly. And you kind of just sometimes have to accept that. Like, maybe why I'm not doing things is because I'm afraid and stuff, or I'm unsure and insecure. And I think understanding that and understanding those emotions are okay, but also understanding that you have to work through those emotions. You just have to get past it. You know, there's never going to be a perfect solution or perfect decision. You just have to decide on something and do it and hope it works out. And I'm telling that to myself right now because it's something I struggle with a lot. But, you know, I think I'm giving advice to myself and my younger self and people who are in the same situation, especially if you do have a disability that makes those things a lot harder. Learn to be kind to yourself. Learn to work with yourself. Put small steps. Do small things at a time. Don't put big expectations on your shoulder. Understand it's a journey. It's going to take years. It is okay to fail. Let it be slow. I think a lot of times as designers, we are like, oh, I need to do all these projects. I need to do all of this. I need to do all the networking at once. Like, I need to do this very fast. I'm like, no, take your time. Like, if you are building a freelance career, maybe take a side job or maybe to take your own time. Do what's comfortable for you because it takes time to build up and that is okay. Like, you have a long time ahead of you. You have a long life. It is okay to take your time, adapt. Like, my university education is taking a couple of years longer because that's what I need and that is okay. Like, society is just so much about productivity and so much about being effective and pushing yourself. And sometimes it's nice to calm down and relax and take your own pace. Like, if you're doing, like, graphic design, maybe, like, it's okay to work with it a couple of hours a week. It's okay to work with it every day, but do what's right for you and do it at your own pace. And sometimes a slow pace is what we need.
Love it. So if people want to follow you on social media,
The name is at Flyers Witch. So like hockey team Flyers and then Witch. Right. And on Instagram, it's at Esmiura with two A's. It's the same name as in my email or my Twitter header.
Okay, good. You brought a ton of energy today and I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. That was awesome. Love to hear your background and perspective. And yeah, you can tell that you really love what you do. So
yeah, thank you for having me on. It's fun. It's fun getting to talk about these things.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.